Typically, this leaves them with take-home pay somewhere between zero and maybe $1,000 a month. Poverty. Adjuncts usually get no benefits, no real chance of earning full-time positions, no due process or severance pay if dismissed, no say in curriculum or school policies, not even office space. Like their counterparts at Walmart and McDonald's, adjunct college professors are not treated as valuable resources to be nurtured, but as cheap, exploitable, and disposable labor. This is Jim Hightower saying, unsurprisingly, this contingent of the low-wage army is organizing too. For information, contact New Faculty Majority at www.newfacultymajority.info.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino. My co-host Robert Jones is at the Left Forum Conference in New York City this week, which is a large annual conference of leftists and progressive intellectuals and activists. They come together to talk about political improvements to our current state of affairs. Robert and some of his colleagues are there injecting animal rights into the world of leftist thought and activism. Go, Robert. I'm happy to introduce Danny Toms, who is a local longtime ethical vegan and animal rights advocate. Danny will be my guest co-host today. Welcome, and thank you for filling in, Danny.
It's exciting to be here, and I'm looking forward to an entertaining show and interesting discussion. Thanks, Jeannie.
We've spent a lot of time chatting, so I'm looking forward to it, too. What do we have coming up in today's show, Danny?
Tonight on Non-Human Radio, the mission to Mars, where we will look for Matt Damon, vegans in Congress, and labor abuses in the poultry industry. All that plus the vegan calendar of events coming up. Over to you, Jeannie.
Veg News reported last week that the Minneapolis-based vegan company, The Herbivorous Butcher, will make meatless meals for a two-week simulated mission to Mars. The brother and sister team that created the super successful vegan butcher shop were invited by NASA to create some sample meals for Mars mission simulation that will take place next year in Utah, because Utah is very Mars-like, evidently. The food that they make now will be frozen and then reheated next year when the simulation begins. And the vegan meals they made that they listed were a breakfast frittata with a vegan egg, bacon, and jack cheese, and a dinner enchilada with vegan chorizo, breakfast sausage, and mozzarella. And I myself wonder how good they'll taste after being frozen for a year. What do you think, Danny?
I hope they taste good. I don't think freezing food will be the mode of going to Mars, though, because it'll be very heavy. But it's a great experiment to start working these products into the program.
Oh, right, because usually, at least when you hear about, like, former space missions or even, like, on the ISS, the International Space Station, the food is freeze-dried, right, and then rehydrated because it's lighter that way.
Definitely. I think every ounce gets accounted for with fuel costs and gravity and acceleration and all that.
Okay. Well, I wonder if they're going to try that with this stuff. Maybe we just don't have all the details. Anyway, the meals sound pretty tasty, but I think more interesting is that this issue of what type of food is eaten on space travel and, who knows, colonizing other planets or other solar systems, it raises questions, I think, about the systems and processes that we take along with us, right? We're human beings, we're traveling in basically tin cans, and we make careful decisions about what comes with us, right?
Definitely. I mean, you could kind of go back to the post-Columbian expansion, right? They came over on the ships, and they made sure to bring a few chickens, a few cows, a few of this, because they were bringing their life with them, going to reproduce that same system. And that probably will be tried for initial space flight, or somebody's going to want to try it, but it just doesn't make any sense. It's got to be a huge shift in eating and food production and processing, because you just don't have the weight, you don't have the resources or the water to, you know, eat all these things, not to mention, obviously, the ethical implications.
So I just want to back up. When you say post-Columbian, you mean after Columbus sailed to the New World.
Right.
Okay. And so, so I guess we see sort of a trial version of what we're facing as, of what humanity's facing as time goes on with the space travel.
I mean, definitely it's 8 months to get there, roughly, you know, depending on your mode of travel. And then you start talking further, you know, galactic expansion. I think it has to be, you know, vegan food. It has to be assembled from, you know, powders and water, and just to get there. And then what can you start? You know, we all seen the Matt Damon movie, or it's on our list. You know, what are you going to be able to grow there? How are you going to be able to survive for long periods of time where you don't know when the return ship happens? It can't really be based on a system of animal agriculture.
Right, and when you mentioned Matt Damon, you're talking about that blockbuster movie, as well as a very popular novel, The Martian.
Yes,
right, where
yes.
The premise being that a Mars mission astronaut gets stranded and has to fend for himself with very little resources, right?
Right.
And he survives by growing potatoes, I believe, right? He takes the potatoes that were transported for their Thanksgiving dinner or something, and cultivates them.
I believe so.
Right? And potatoes, interestingly, do provide enough protein. They're high starch vegetables, but
right.
if you eat enough calories of potatoes, you will have enough protein.
Right. I think we were just reading some of those articles that the complete and incomplete protein nutrition myths are now pretty much debunked, and it's really about if you eat enough calorie protein, you'll have enough protein, and there's certainly plenty of calories in potatoes.
Right, for the average. And I mean, if you're an athlete or something, or work hard labor, you definitely need to pay attention to increasing your protein intake. So do you think NASA might be thinking outside the box, or do you think they're still sort of constrained to thinking inside the box and thinking animal-based meals?
I would suspect they know. You know, those guys are obviously smart, and they plan for every contingency, and they know there's no long-form space flight where you've got a herd of cattle in the bottom of your ship, you know. I don't think they probably want to come out and say, you know, NASA is looking at all vegan meals for space flight, because it's just not going to fly with the current public. But I'm sure they know, ultimately, they got to start getting there, and it sounds like that's why they're involving the herbivorous butcher in that, which I think is a good baby step. Like you and I always talk about veganism, it's, you know, it's small baby attainable steps, you know.
Yeah, like our potlucks. Like, you don't have to be 100% vegan to come to the potlucks, but you do have to be vegan for 2 hours, or in this case, 8 months.
Right.
as you traverse the solar system.
I mean, even you talk about the things they eat now, right? They're eating freeze-dried ice cream and kind of random snack things that they'll have in the space station, which totally makes sense because they're up there for a year from Earth. But even a lot of those foods, that's not going to get you to the moon and to Mars. You know, you're not going to carry marshmallows to Mars. It doesn't make economic sense.
Oh, but marshmallows are so tasty.
Vegan marshmallows.
Did you know Trader Joe's has vegan marshmallows now?
I've been seeing that. I think they're the same as the Dandy's marshmallows. I can't buy them because I just eat the whole bag. You don't need hot chocolate.
You have to plan a camping trip or something, and then you can just buy your bag for your s'mores, your vegan s'mores. So next up. Any other thoughts on space travel? Are we missing anything?
I have a book I read a long time ago, which is an Anne McCaffrey book from like the 70s. And she's written many good books and many bad books in terms of fantasy and sci-fi. And this book was called, I think, The Dinosaur Planet. And it was about spacefarers that found a planet that was inhabited by dinosaurs. And by that point in time, they were all vegetarian because you've got to kind of be vegetarian in space. And then one of the groups started eating the dinosaurs, and there was great social conflict about now they're going backwards. They were basically a vegetarian society, and these one guys are like, we got all these dinosaurs, we might as well eat them. And she drew lots of allusions, which were probably incorrect, that, you know, the dinosaur eaters were more barbarian-like, and they were reverting. So it made an impact on me as a kid. It was kind of interesting, and I think sociologically, that is something we could see in the future where you would probably convert from one way. Then you do get to habitable planet. What do? You bring back all your old vices? Do you start growing tobacco and raising cows? Or do you try to stick with what you have? And I did try to read the book again, and it's pretty bad. So it's good for kids.
So, Dini, I just got answered a phone call from someone that said she'd like to know if that space food tastes any good.
I've never tried space food.
I had freeze-dried ice cream once a long time ago, and, I mean, it tasted like, you know, it melted in your mouth. It wasn't bad, but it wouldn't sustain you. I suspect, you know, like with vegan food and good cooking in general, it's all about the spices and the seasoning, so I don't know what they're doing for the NASA food. It would be interesting to try to get. Maybe we could make some NASA recipes for the next potluck.
Yeah, really. And but, you know, the Abrivas Butcher is very popular, so I'm sure that their food is high flavor, well-seasoned.
Oh, definitely
stuff,
looks good.
Right?
And there's another vegan butcher down in Berkeley, the Butcher's Son, where you can go buy, you know, salami, provolone, and it's all very good stuff, actually.
Yeah, it's all a lot of it's seitan based, and that stuff just takes seasoning and flavors really well. So yeah, I just taught a class on how to make your own seitan last month for the Dharma Voices for Animals.
Fry anything and it tastes good. That's my motto.
Yeah, or batter it up and fry it, right?
Well, if you want to double up, yeah.
So our next story, our next news piece is about Senator Cory Booker. Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey hosted a luncheon for the Congressional Black Caucus, where he served 44 African members of Congress a vegan lunch. He filmed the reactions to the catered lunch in a video that he posted to his Facebook profile, accompanied by an explanation of why he wanted to bring awareness of plant-based eating to the Black community specifically. Senator Booker explained to the caucus members that, quote, Black America's health data and disparities are stunning, with the rates of heart failure 20%, 20 times that of whites, and rates of diabetes almost 2 times that of whites, end quote. So this is such a serious issue and a dimension of veganism that we don't talk about very much. We are an animal rights show mostly, and we talk about animal issues and our diet in that context. But there are significant health issues facing there are significant chronic health issues that are improved by eating a plant-based diet, a vegan diet. An overwhelming majority of the members who attended the luncheon had positive comments. And they said that the food was awesome and healthy. The menu was Caesar salad, cornbread, coleslaw, buffalo cauliflower wings, Chesapeake zucchini fritters with a lemon remoulade sauce, and then dessert was double chocolate brownies with coconut whipped cream. You know, we're talking a lot about food this show. I think I read off like the whole menu for the Mars emulation, and I just read off the whole menu for this luncheon. It was catered by a company called DC Vegan Catering, which is a young vegan couple who do this in DC. Representative Marsha Fudge from Ohio jokingly jabbed at Booker, saying, quote, I think we should never allow you to buy lunch again. But then later after the lunch, Representative Fudge admitted that the lunch was not as bad as she thought it was going to be.
Do we all need to send Marsha Fudge some vegan fudge?
Yeah, really, really. That's such a typical reaction to vegan food, right? It's a prejudging of what they think it's going to taste like, because it's not within your normal experience, even though all these items are clearly just standard items you'd have at any kind of luncheon, vegan or omnivore.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cultural shift, right? If you take someone to South Africa and say you're eating South African food for the first time and it's 100 years ago, what is this? If you're eating Chinese food 100 years ago, you're like, what is that? And then you move into more multicultural areas and now everybody eats everything, but vegan is still kind of this other thing. But, I mean, you look at how curry is the national dish of Britain now, so maybe.
Is it?
Well, they're very big fans of Indian food, right?
Okay.
And so, you know, and that's kind of their revenge on the empire, as my Indian friends would say. you know, hopefully in not too short a time, the vegan is just as assimilated as everything else, or plant-based, as we like to say, to make the assimilation go down smoother.
Yeah. Cory Booker is an interesting person. He's an up-and-coming young politician. I hope we see a lot more from him in the future. He attended Stanford as an undergrad. He went to Harvard Law School. He's a very smart guy. And I remember reading about him when he was the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and he was like among the first of these major politicians to use social media pretty effectively in terms of reaching out and communicating with his constituents. So his constituents would tweet him about a pothole on a certain street, and Cory Booker would then relay that information to his public works director and get it fixed. So
yeah, I definitely like Cory Booker. He's one of the more progressive modern politicians, and as you said, he's actually engaging with his political constituents and not just, you know, sitting up on Capitol Hill. One thing you mentioned here in terms of food, to make sure people know, like, the menu consisted of a Caesar salad. Well, you know, thanks to Hampton Creek right now, the Hampton Creek Company, you can go to any of the supermarkets in Chico and you can buy vegan Caesar dressing, can buy vegan ranch now. You don't need to make it from scratch. And I know, you know, how many people are held back from veganism because they want that ranch dressing, you know. And now you can go buy it in a bottle and squirt it out just like you always have been.
That's true. I would go vegan except for I love cheese or I love ranch dressing,
right.
That kind of thing.
And I can make fine dressings from scratch, but I'm like, I'll eat this stuff. This is a lot easier. Salad in a bag, some dressing. I mean, we can't always make everything from scratch perfectly organic and, you know, nutritionally complete. Sometimes you want to grab something out of the cupboard.
Yeah, the pressures of modern life often preclude, a lot of home cooking, although it is generally healthier. But there's a lot to be said for convenience.
Yeah, there's no bigger barrier to, you know, veganism saying, well, yeah, it's easy to go vegan if you cook everything from scratch three times a day.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, 1842.
I know I've gone through a cycle that, like, I used to cook everything from scratch, and now I have simplified everything. So I'll just make, like, a batch of rice and some beans and then rely on a really tasty sauce, like a sriracha or maybe a curry sauce or something, and then dredge my rather simple bowl into that. Just because it's simple and it takes less time.
Yeah, I mean, flavors are what make food. What is fast food except for cheese and condiments? You know, you put that on anything, nobody cares what it is.
That's true. Yeah, like a veggie dog by itself can be kind of mediocre tasting, but once you add some texture with some onions and some sauerkraut and mustard,
yep,
it's delicious. Do you put ketchup on your hot dog?
I do ketchup, mustard, and sweet relish.
Okay.
And if I'm feeling naughty, I'll put some vegan mayonnaise on it.
Okay.
And if I'm very lazy, I microwave and I eat it with a piece of Oro Wheat potato bread.
Oh, my gosh. Mayonnaise and ketchup on a hot dog, huh? That is like...
This is so bachelor chow, you know. There are other times I cook a full meal, but...
Okay. All right. Well, our next story is decidedly more downbeat. We're taking a look at the poultry industry. As you know, chickens are among the most abused animals in agriculture. Between the horrors and confinement of egg production, which we've talked about many times on Non-Human Radio, the way broiler chickens are raised as meat animals, there is no doubt in my mind that chickens are among the most intelligent animals, and they are born to suffer when they had the misfortune to be born into animal agriculture. Just for human consumption. And it's interesting because the consumption of other animals, such as cows and pigs, is on the decline. But to fill the gap of the number of pounds per meat that the average American eat per year, chickens have become the most consumed animal-based meat in America. So it should come as no surprise then that workers in this industry on the chicken slaughter and processing line are also among the most abused. Oxfam America recently reported that while workers in the American poultry industry earn low wages, they suffer high rates of injury and illness, and experience a climate of fear in the workplace because a lot of them are undocumented workers, the thing that offends these workers the most is the lack of adequate bathroom breaks and suffering that entails, especially for women. Workers reported having to wear Pampers diapers because it was impossible or very hard to step off the production line for a bathroom break. Oxfam, if you don't know it, is a global organization working to right the wrongs of poverty, hunger, and injustice. They are not a particularly vegan organization, but they do care about labor issues and humans. And as animal rights activists, we're not only talking about non-human animals. We should also be humans are animals also. So Oxfam interviewed hundreds of line workers from some of the largest U.S. chicken processors, and including Tyson Foods, Pilgrim, and Purdue Chickens. And the typical plant processes about... I had to double-check that I didn't have a typo. They process 180,000 birds a day. That's at one plant. And a typical worker on the processing line handles about 40 birds a minute, skinning, pulling, cutting, deboning, and packaging. So they'll be doing that one thing 40 times a minute for their entire shift.
That's just horrible.
I mean, try doing anything 40 times a minute, you know?
Any blue-collar job doing that, and you're filing worker comp for repetitive stress, and you're getting a chair to sit in and a soft pad to stand on, and they just don't move at that velocity.
So, and while American labor law, like you say, mandates certain protections for workers' comp issues, they also mandate bathroom breaks. Workers reported waiting for more than an hour for someone to swap in on the line. So they can only take a break if someone takes their place shoulder to shoulder on the processing line, because they have to keep up production. Many of these workers said that they were forced to urinate or defecate where they stood, or left the line without permission because no help arrived. And of course, if they leave the line without permission, they risk being fired. At some plants, workers have come to expect no relief, so they wear diapers to withstand their working conditions. And it's just horrific that the suffering doesn't end, right? The chicken suffers in these barns where they raise them as broiler hens, and suffering continues.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a whole encapsulation of suffering and exploitation, you know, due to the economic system, right? As you know, it's 2016 now, and yet, you know, how much does a chicken nugget cost? These things get cheaper and cheaper, or they stay at these extremely low prices based on the intensive, you know, factory farming of the chickens, the amount of the human toll to do this slaughtering. Most of those workers are usually immigrants or undocumented immigrants. That's why they can't push back at their bosses to say, I want this break or I'm going to sue. The bosses know they can exploit them, just like in any other situation with mostly fueled by migrant workers, they get exploited.
Or where they live, there are just no other employers. It's like work for Purdue or you're out of a job and homeless.
But I do think if you look at you know, how many animals are slaughtered in the country and or the world, and how many of us know a slaughterhouse worker? You know, we don't.
Yeah.
And then it's both, because it's either, you know, a class thing, as we said, or people don't want to talk about it, or they only do it for a year or two, and then they're burned out and they do something else, because you can't handle that brutality over time. And it's like, and that's, you know, that's, you wouldn't buy product from a guy selling you a car if you saw the mechanic, you know, being mistreated in the shop in front of you, you know. But we hide this on the edge of town. We hide it under ag laws. It's something that's gone on for history, right? It's been a human evolution. So slaughterhouses and tanneries have always been on the edge of town. You never want to know about it. You kind of have to do it, but nobody participates in it, you know.
Out of sight, out of mind.
It just comes in a little box, you know.
And we all play a role. If you consume animal products, you are playing a role in this kind of suffering of both animals, non-human animals, and human animals. In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and worldwide at KZFR.org. I forgot to read our underwriters. I'm going to just take care of business right now. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by DigitalPath, providing high-speed internet and telephone for homes and businesses throughout the North State. Specializing in rural and hard-to-reach areas, DigitalPath is your locally owned option for internet with upgraded service plans and expanded coverage areas. Visit digitalpath.net or call toll-free at 1-800-676-PATH, P-A-T-H, for more information. And by Bruce Jenkins Insurance and Financial Services. Bruce specializes in life and health insurance, long-term care, and annuities. For answers to your questions about Medicare, Cover California, and state-mandated required health insurance, you can call Bruce Jenkins at 530-781-3592 or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com. Okay. What do we have up next, Danny?
Are we ready for the calendar of events?
I think we are.
All right. Could I say one more thing about birds?
Yes.
Well, you know, it reminded me of the battles I'm fighting in my garden with the scrub jays. And I think Bruno Chico is familiar with both squirrels and scrub jays. And I am building cages around my fruit. I am putting nets around it. And those scrub jays, they get it in. They get in. They get that fruit. You know, birds are very smart animals. They don't want to be in cages. They have lives to live. They want to live. They got things to do. And the uncounted chickens that are in cages, you know, and then slaughtered is just horrifying, really.
Yeah, it is. It is. Last week we covered a Supreme Court decision in India that mandated birds' right to fly.
Wow.
So it had to do with, in particular, trafficking of birds for the pet trade and
right.
the zoo trade. And the confinement of those birds became a legal battle because it involved commerce. It was just fascinating, and it seems to be a very strongly held position in baked into the Constitution in India.
There have been a lot of progressive animal rights things coming out of India, I think.
It's great. It's great to see. Anyway, back to the calendar.
All right.
Here are some upcoming animal-friendly events in Chico. Remember, all the info on these events, as well as other items we mentioned throughout the show, are posted on our website, nonhumanradio.com. On this Saturday, May 21st, I'll be teaching a class on making vegan cheese from scratch, courtesy of the Chico chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals.
Her cheese is delicious.
I'll demonstrate how to make four types of vegan cheese, including a great, nice, soft brie and a mozzarella suitable for pizza. The class is very beginner-friendly. I'm a very nice person, and everyone's welcome. There's a small fee to cover materials, and the class will be held at the Sky Creek Dharma Center in North Chico. The registration link will be posted with the show notes. The Chico Vegan Potluck is coming up on Saturday, May 28th at 6 p.m. in the Chico Library Community Room. If you're shy about attending or curious about a vegan diet and you want to find out what Mars astronauts are going to be eating, you'll want to attend this potluck and meet about 30 or more really nice vegans and dispel any misconceptions you may have about what vegan food is like.
And there are windows from the street, so you can look in and decide whether you want to run away. We've noticed that happen sometimes. That's totally fine.
There's a lobby you can peek in, and you don't have to step through those doors, but you sure are welcome. If you have an event that you'd like included on our weekly calendar of events, send an email to nonhumanradio@gmail.com. Thank you very much, and I hope to see you around town. So, Danny, I think we're about at the end of our time today. I've really enjoyed talking about different dimensions of these news articles with you, and I've just really enjoyed having you on the show today.
It's been really fun. It's always good to have these conversations with you.
So we have one last bit of business to take care of, and that is the Animal Rights Thought of the Week, which is a passage from one of my favorite books, The Last Unicorn by Peter S. Beagle. This is a dialogue between the heroine, Molly Grew, and the hero wizard, Shmendrick, the magician. But what if there isn't a happy ending?
There are no happy endings, because nothing ends.
Okay. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Sue Hildebrand. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again or have your friends and family listen, visit us online at nonhumanradio.com. Be sure to stay tuned for The Real Issue with Sue Hildebrand coming up next. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.